Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. Happy Tuesday to you. We've got a Presidential Medal of Freedom to discuss. We've got the Byron Nelson coming up in Kyle, in your neck of the woods. We're going to get to that in a little bit. Some Tuesday trivia, and then later on the show, Sean Martin. Before we get to all that, Kyle, are you going to venture over to the course for any of the action this weekend?
I don't know. I went last year. It was really hot last year, and it's kind of a wide open course. It wasn't the greatest like in person experience. And I think the weird thing about golf, and I think that people maybe don't like people that I talk to are like, oh, do you go to every tournament? It's like, man, a lot of times it's so much easier to watch it on TV, which is the great irony of being like 20 miles from this tournament, right? Sometimes it's just easier to watch and cover on TV because it's the one sport where not everything is in front of you if you're at the event. You know, if you're at a basketball game, if you're at a football game, everything unfolds in front of you, and it's different in golf. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, like people tell me all the time, it's like, oh my gosh, you're right beside Duke and UNC. Do you go to all the games? It's like, no. Well, sometimes seeing, you know, Duke beat Georgia Tech by 15 isn't really going to be worth the professional trip. And you know, to watch Keith Mitchell run away with this thing by 7 strokes, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be where it's at. I don't know.
Is that your pick?
No. But I did find myself going through the field, and I was like, oh, okay, all right. This is
you could get like 26 under winning. I mean, it's just, I've played the course. It can be so easy if it's not windy. And the last couple of days, Chip, have been like 70, no wind. I mean, it's just like, guys could shoot 62 every day.
Brooks might. We've got a lot to get to. Let's start with back at our nation's capital, where Tiger Woods received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. This was something. He becomes the fourth professional golfer to receive this honor. He joins many others from throughout sports history to receive this honor. There is, I think the way that I'm approaching this is to go through and look at the other sports stars that have received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Like Michael Jordan received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. So it truly is for excellence within your own field. I didn't really feel the need to stretch it or try to wrestle with what it means for Tiger's legacy, just because when you compare him to the others who've received this honor, based on what he's done already to this point in his career, he would meet whatever abstract, non-existent criteria exists.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, whatever. Like, I don't care whether he was probably always going to get it and probably always should have gotten it. The timing is weird, right? Like, and not just the timing of receiving it, but the timing of it being announced. Didn't Trump announce it like a day after the Masters?
Well, was it just like that?
I think it was, and I think it just felt like it felt very like reactionary in the moment, like, oh, we're gonna do this huge thing that's only happened to 32 other athletes, you know, just because Tiger won the 2019 Masters. And it's like, can we get to the FedEx playoffs first? Like, can we close that out in 2019? The whole thing just felt like very like How about this
for perspective? It's hosting season there, right? Like, they just had the Baylor women's basketball team. They threw out the invite to the Virginia team. The Virginia team declined. Like, it is put out the Big Macs, the McDonald's. It is the hosting season right now for sports in the White House, best I can tell.
The Big Macs. So the thing that I was thinking about as I watched, I don't know how much you caught. It was basically Michael Bamberger wrote on golf.com that it was essentially like Trump reading Tiger's Wikipedia page, which was both true and hilarious. But the only thing I could think was going back. So the first major I covered was 2015 Chambers. The first major I covered in person was 2015 Chambers Bay. Tiger shoots an 80 on Thursday, tops a ball on 18 into a bunker, like hits a top with a 3-wood, doesn't even get it off the ground. And if I would have told you after that round, hey, in less than 4 years before the 2019 U.S. Open, Tiger Woods will be awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom from President Donald Trump in the Rose Garden after winning the Masters, you'd have been like, what are you talking about?
I get it. This was an Idiocracy. This is the Idiocracy prequel, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I know. Like,
that's the thing that I was thinking about. And I don't know, it was cool to see Tiger was way like out of his world, and he was kind of emotional. It's kind of cool to see. I kind of liked it.
He has that, you know, and it's the continued storyline. It's something that it's a message and it's a narrative that I will admit he continues to push across, and probably because there's some amount of truth to it, across multiple interviews, still weeks and weeks after the win. But this is a little bit for him, or at least it is being positioned as such that, this is about me, but like, this is about me and my family. You know, he's got his mom up there. He's got his kids up there. Like, it is very much like the Woods family tour right now.
Yeah. Well, and it's weird because it's almost like you can see him feeling these emotions, like even after the Masters and when he was up there yesterday, but you can also see him thinking like, oh, this is what emotion feels like. because for so long it felt like he just, and I get why he did this. It just feels like he just like completely shut himself off emotionally. And I think there are like legitimately good reasons for that. Some of them I think were not good, but that's fascinating to see somebody who's that age sort of like start to understand some of the emotions that go along with just like being a normal human, which he's never really been. I think that part of it is like, and I don't know if he could ever like truly put that into words, and I have no idea what, you know, obviously what that feels like, but I think that part of it is super intriguing.
From some news to more of a viral item, the KPMG Women's PGA Championship Media Day was in Minneapolis, and KPMG, a primary sponsor for Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson shows up. He's going to talk to the reporters. He's going to have some fun. And oh my gosh, Kyle, he's hitting home runs.
I'm very dubious of this video. Did you watch it?
Let's see. You're dubious because it's low quality?
Yeah, it's low quality. Everybody acts like he hit one out. That is the swing he takes on this is not of someone who just hit a home run. And like, Major League Baseball parks are really big for people who don't play baseball regularly. Like, they're huge.
This video was shot on a BlackBerry.
Yeah, it might have been. It was like an iPhone 4.
Yes.
I have a lot of questions. I don't think Phil actually hit a ball out of the park.
Woo! And now we're going to go to college baseball expert Kyle Porter. Kyle says his swing does not represent that. I'll say that he probably hit it foul.
A wood bat. Come on. Like, if it's metal, okay, maybe.
But you know, Phil's they served like, him up a meatball. Like, you know, they just put it right there for him.
Phil's almost 50.
325. 325, yeah. Kyle. 325.
I'm out. It's a great video though. Phil went from like, so when he first got on Twitter, everybody was freaking out like, this is going to be awesome. And then it was like not awesome for a couple of weeks or months, especially like the match stuff. And now for the last, I don't know, 6 weeks or 2 months, it's been awesome again. So I'm whoever's ideas those are, whoever's running that, I'm in. It's been great.
I think that he had the extra speed and strength to lay into that because he missed 2 days at the Wells Fargo. Much easier to go yard when you're not having to take on Quail Hollow Golf Club for 2 extra days after missing the cut.
It's true.
All right, and in this weekend's action, we got Tony Romo playing, and he will be in the field.
Yeah, like he's playing the event.
Sponsor's exemption, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's he got a sponsor exemption. Doug Gim, who played at Texas, mm-hmm. and was a finalist in the USAM a couple years ago. He got a sponsor's exemption. And actually, did he win the USAM at Riviera?
Let's see.
I know he ended up playing in the Masters, so he was in the finals. I can't remember.
That was that incredible finish, right?
Yeah, I think that was the one that that Doc Redman beat Doug Gim.
Yes.
I think.
That is correct.
Doc Redman played well at Quail Hollow last week. But yeah, the Romo thing, him being in the field at Byron Nelson, I don't know. It's kind of weird. It's like, okay, I get it. I don't know. Like, I guess I just don't really know why. Like, what is he, like, is it to attract fans? Is it like, what's the, I don't know. I don't get it. I'm kind of out on it, I guess.
Woo!
I'm not mad about it,
right?
But I'm sort of like, I just don't, I mean, the him being in like a web event, you're like, okay, like I get that. Like he's a really big name in a pool of names that maybe aren't that big, but it's like, hey, we got Jordan Spieth and Brooks Koepka and Patrick Reed and Hideki in the field this week. Do we need Romo? I don't know. Like that's the part of it that I'm not totally sure about.
Correct me if I'm wrong. 150 plus player field.
Yeah, 156.
Yeah, nah, Romo can be there. Just don't sponsors exemption him all the way to the weekend so that Jim Nantz can gush about him. Like
he gets a sponsors exemption into Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This, yeah, it is. It's a wide open enough field that if you're just going to throw him in there, that's fine. I'm not going to call shenanigans unless all of a sudden it's like, and so it's going to be the top 70 players to miss the cut and Tony Romo. Or to make the have you seen that commercial where he's putting and the hole is oversized? It's a Skechers commercial. He's talking about how comfortable they are. Yeah, as long as the cup that he has to punt in at Trinity Forest isn't like from the Skechers commercial, I'm fine.
Dude, I think he's gonna shoot some good score. It's not a hard course. Like it's not difficult.
He's gonna.
Like, I mean, I certainly don't think he's gonna make the cut. But I think like when you like if you just pull up his scorecard, you're like, oh, okay, yeah.
I bet he shoots 72-78.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think he'll be better than that. I think he'll shoot like 70-74.
Is that going to be good enough to make the cut, or do you really believe the 2400 is about to win this thing?
No. So last year the cut was 4 under.
Wow.
So, but then the worst player in the field last year shot. David. Are we counting David Duval?
No,
he was in the field. So next worst was this guy named Brian Norman. He shot 76-75.
Sworn enemy of Kyle Porter, David Duval.
I always forget about it, and so every time you bring it up, it makes me laugh.
All right, trivia time. Chips on the hot seat.
Yeah, I got three of them for you. They'll be quick. How many what appearance is this for Jordan Spieth at the Byron Nelson, and what place on the leaderboard do you think his best finish ever is?
I think it's his second, and I think his best finish is like 30th.
Wait, you think this is his second appearance at the Byron Nelson?
Yeah.
Ever?
Isn't I might have had this. Is this the first one that he broke through when he was really, really young?
Yes.
Oh, okay, let me back up. Let me hard back on that. Isn't there another Texas tournament that he actually doesn't play in that often?
Well, he won Colonial. He won the I don't know what it's called now. Charles Schwab at Colonial, the Fort Worth tournament.
Gotcha. I'm gonna say it's his fifth appearance, and that his best finish was in that debut.
His best finish was in that debut. He finished 16th, and this is his ninth Byron Nelson appearance.
Because he started at 15 years old, right? Or 16 years old.
He's like 25. How has he played in nine of these?
Because he's Texas's favorite son. Sorry, Kyle.
Tony Romo is going to, yeah, Tony Romo will have played in nine, I guess, like 8 years from now, apparently.
Yeah, but he has not matched his best finish. Maybe that was the little nugget or storyline, is that this is,
yeah,
like, right, he is not recaptured when he, you know, won everyone over that first time.
Yeah, and, you know, different course now, different, but yeah, it's weird that when he was 16, he finished 16th or 17 or however, maybe he was 15. I don't know. And he still hasn't gotten back there. Okay, two youngest winners ever at this tournament, and they've both been fairly recently.
Is Aaron Wise last year? Is that one of them?
Yep.
Aaron Wise and. Is it another college golfer that we talk about a lot?
Well, we talk about him a lot, but no, not because of his college career.
Mark Leishman.
Tiger Woods.
What?
1997. He beat a fellow named Lee Rinker by two strokes at the GTE Byron Nelson Golf Classic.
And was it in the calendar? It was after the Masters?
It was, I believe, after the Masters, yeah. He just won so much. It's absurd.
He just started mowing down the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I mean, so you had a stretch there. 95, Ernie Els wins. 96, Phil Mickelson wins. And 97, Tiger wins.
It's pretty good. Crazy. Yeah. Pretty good group of winners. Who are our last couple?
Do what?
Who are our last couple? Who was it before Aaron Wise?
Billy Horschel, Sergio, and Stephen Bowditch, and Brendan Todd, and Sangmin Bae.
Okay. Not all Hall of Famers there, but that's okay.
Okay, how many times do you think the namesake of this tournament, Byron Nelson, actually won this tournament?
Feels like a trick. I'm going to say zero.
He won it once. Okay. He won the very first one when it was called the Texas Victory Open, which is an incredible name. And then the next year it was changed to the Dallas Open. Sam Snead won it. That was in 1945. Somebody named Jug McSpaden finished second in both years. Poor old Jug couldn't get past Byron Nelson and Sam Snead in the first 2 years of this tournament.
Jug?
Jug, J-U-G.
Oh. Hell yeah.
I knew you would love that. And then the next year it was changed to the Dallas Invitational and Ben Hogan won it. So your first three winners of this event were Byron Nelson, Sam Snead, and Ben Hogan. Then they didn't play it for like 8 years. And then, it's had more names than... I mean, it's had a lot of names. It wasn't named the Byron Nelson until 1968.
And where was it before Trinity Forest?
It was at TPC Four Seasons, which was, I mean, honestly, like, it was probably the worst course on the PGA Tour.
Flames.
I mean, it was like, and I mean that like anecdotally, but also whenever they do those like anonymous player votes, like it was like pretty consistently voted the worst stop on the tour.
Well, you hinted at it a little bit. I do want to bring some attention back to that. So the way that this course is set up, if there's not like it is one of those courses where the greens are not going to be fast because the course is set up to try and capture some of those howling Texas winds. And if you don't have those winds, then it's just it's go time for this field. And while the field, you know, we threw out a couple of names. Yeah, I said Keith Mitchell. We do have like Brooks Koepka. We do have Spieth. We do have Patrick Reed, Henrik Stenson, Hideki, Aaron Wise, Sung J.M.
My guy.
Mm. Sung J.M. Over your boy Charles Howell III, head-to-head. Cash it last week.
Yeah. Did you have that?
Yeah.
That was solid.
I mean, I think I'm just looking for Sung J.M. head-to-heads until the market catches up to him. Auto so fire. Last year,
to your point, the top five on the leaderboard: Aaron Wise, Mark Leishman, Brandon Grace, JJ Spahn, and Keith Mitchell, your boy. They all shot all four rounds in the 60s, and each of them had a 63 or better in at least one round.
Unbelievable.
So Aaron Wise had a 63, Mark Leishman had a 61, Brandon Grace had a 62, JJ Spahn and Keith Mitchell both had 63s, and they all shot all four rounds in the 60s. So, I mean, it's just a, you know, a festival of birdies.
Have you started to circle any of your players to watch?
Yeah, I'm picking, do you want to do picks right now or after we get Sean on?
We can do that. We can wait till we get Sean on. Is he going to be there?
Huh?
Is he going to be there?
No, he's not going to be there, but I want to deliver my winner to him in person. Like I want him to hear when I say it.
Oh, he's in the quiet booth right now, so it's Hideki, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, he's about to hear it, and he's going to listen to it. Yeah, he's we're going to let Sean out of the quiet booth so that he can hear this Hideki pick right after this.
It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out, Vuori.com/first, and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Did you know that more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Those numbers do not add up to me, and I know it can be confusing, the biomechanics of the foot, the bones, the muscles, everything in between, but solving foot pain is simple, and that's where Superfeet comes into play. These Superfeet insoles go into your shoes, give your feet comfort and support where they need it the most, and redistribute the forces that reduce both stress and strain through your entire body, not just your feet. Insoles have been phenomenal for me personally, and they are clinically proven to decrease fatigue, reduce injury, and improve comfort. I can attest to that myself, especially when walking a lot of golf holes that I play. So if you feel good, you play good, you look good, everything works out from there, and it starts from the bottom up. Visit superfeet.com and enter promo code FIRST at checkout for 15% off your first order plus free shipping.
And now let's welcome back friend of the show, Sean Martin, PGAtour.com. Sean was on the scene for Max Homa's win in Charlotte, part of the... He was the insider for PGA Tour coverage of the event. At what point in the tournament Do you think that you started gathering, cobbling together your notes? At what point did you feel like this was going to be a career-changing moment for Max Homa?
Well, it was kind of crazy, you know, because we were kind of bouncing back and forth between the, you know, Rory was three groups up, kind of figured, he thought he was going to make a charge. And then you had three co-leaders, so they're spaced out between groups. So, and Quail Hollow kind of goes back and forth a lot, where you can kind of bounce between holes, bounce between those three groups. And, you know, so I watched Max, birdie 10, made like a 15-footer, gave a good fist pump. He's unabashed about how much he idolized Tiger growing up. And you could definitely see some, like, Tiger kind of mannerisms and Tiger fist pumps. So made that 15-footer, and then 11, he hits 3-wood, and he kind of sends it left, and it doesn't look like a great tee shot, and you're kind of like, ugh. And then up ahead, like, Justin Rose flags one. He's starting to make a little move. I was watching that, and then I watched the 12th hole guys play that hole, and you're kind of like, well, you know, he just hit that tough tee shot. I'm curious to see what happens when I see him on 12 green where I'm standing. And then all of a sudden, Wells Fargo or Quail Hollow has those little two-man leaderboards like they have at Augusta on each hole. And you're like, oh, he's 15 under. He birdied 11, where I thought he might be in trouble. Like, this thing's pretty much his unless he, you know, he stumbles coming in. He's got like a 3-shot lead at this point. So really, once that happened, you're like, this. I turned to a guy next to me. I'm like, well, I'm going to follow Max because either way, he's the story. Either he wins this thing and he's a big star, or he loses this 3-shot lead. And it's kind of a tough story, kind of a little bit of a heartbreak. But I mean, he kind of took control there at 11.
Golf Twitter was very excited about the Max Homa win. And it was cool. It's a cool story. It's a great story.
He's a great guy. He shows the value of just being very open and honest on social media.
Yes. And in person. And so I guess my question for you is, did you feel like, just in being there and kind of absorbing it all, are we making too much or too little, or are we doing it the right way, like doing it the appropriate amount of Homa winning this tournament?
No, I think it's good. I think he, I hate man of the people type language, but I mean, he kind of really is. Like he uses Twitter in the way that we kind of hope that all athletes use Twitter. And obviously some guys, you know, when you reach a certain level, you just don't have time for it. There's so many other things pulling at you and other responsibilities, and you have to get away and clear your head because the life of a top 10 player is just full of so much noise that I understand why these guys back off. You got to get away from it at some point to keep your sanity. But he definitely uses it the way that we all wish athletes did. And also, I mean, he's just genuinely funny. Like, it's not some, he doesn't need a marketing manager to run his Twitter account. He's really witty and clever on his own. He graduated Cal, obviously, so got a little book smart, and he's not afraid to be honest. Of, you know, guys learn these cliches and stuff to kind of veil what they're really feeling, because you're taught to, you know, you don't want to doubt, you got to believe in yourself, all these things, and these guys do. But at the same time, when you're playing so poorly, these doubts do creep in, but a lot of guys don't want to communicate them because they don't want to focus on them. But Max has been, he's been willing to share it all, to air it all out, and he's just very, very real about it, and I think people appreciate that.
The way that I described it to Chip is that he's as, like, I think, maybe this is wrong, but he appears to be as thoughtful and self-aware as somebody like Rory or Spieth, but his life is much more relatable to us, to you and me, than those guys' lives. And so I think that makes him sort of like what you said, a kind of the, you know, the people's choice or whatever.
Yeah, I think so. He's got this great mind. We see it on Twitter. Obviously, he's very clever. But that mind can be like his greatest asset and his greatest weakness, in a sense of that, you know, he does really think things through. And so when things are going bad, like they were in 2017, he kind of, you know, he started spiraling and thinking like, well, what if I have to go back to Q school, or what if I miss, or, you know, Portland last year, when he birdied the last four holes to qualify for the Web.com Tour Finals, he admitted that he was thinking like, what happens if I don't get through Q school? Is this over almost? Is this, you know, am I not going to make it? So at the same time, he had great self-belief that he would. You still have to doubt. But then at the same time, that mind, when he is playing well, is his greatest strength. I talked to his swing coach after he won, And what he said is that when they started working back together again in 2017, he told Max, like, all right, look, we're going to get your swing sorted out. And then once we do that, you can kind of go back to being the Max Homa that we all know. Because talking to people from his past, like his college teammates, he was always a great closer. And we saw that at the Wells Fargo. You have a guy who's like playing in contention for the first time on the PGA Tour, and he handled it like a veteran. I mean, he was rock solid.
Yeah.
He made all his short putts. And they said you saw the same stuff in college. The NCAAs, he closed out the NCAA title like a champ. You saw it. Pac-12, he shot this 61 at LA Country Club, which doesn't mean a lot to most people, but that course is going to host the US Open in a few years. A college coach said that, you know, the scoring average was 73 that day when he shot 61, so 12 strokes gained on the field, if you will. And he said when he saw it on the leaderboard, he thought that they weren't done, like, transitioning the leaderboard from, like, the member guest, and that the 61 was, like, a score left over from that because that was just so unfathomable a number.
What are you writing the book about this Pac-12 championship?
Man, well, Max was in the sweet spot when I was covering college golf for Golf Week, and that Cal team was dominant. They won, like, I think 11 or 12 times. They, like your Cowboys, they would have won the NCAA title easily if it had been stroke play, but they lost to Thomas Peters' Illinois team in the semis. But I went out to Berkeley for a couple of days to cover them and cover this team. And I don't know what to do with this. It's just a funny story, but we went out and I watched them practice and it was like 35 degrees out. I have this great memory of Max Homa and Michael Kim. Michael Kim's holding the tee up and Max is nailing it into the ground with his driver. Cause like literally the ground was frozen. I probably shouldn't have let them go play, but the course let them go play. Like one of the guys hit a 7-iron and bounced like 20 feet in the air. I've never seen anything like it. It went off the green, but anyways, just random Max Homa memories. But he's a great guy to have known for that long because he's the same now as he was in college.
You mentioned
that's great.
You mentioned Rory McIlroy. Everyone thought he was going to make a charge. Justin Rose made some noise. You know, world golf rankings aside, just sort of Sean Martin's view of the golf world. Who do you think is the best player in golf right now on May 7th?
You want me to? You want Brooks to come after me? Is that what's happening? You're trying to set me up for like a Brandel Brooks type thing here?
We are going to discuss the Brandel Brooks fracas in a little bit, but first, I just want to know like your take on because there's an argument to be made for you know a lot of like Rory McIlroy with all of his top tens and the win at the Players. You could say he's the best player in golf right now. You could say Justin Rose is the best player in golf right now. Dustin Johnson is the best player in golf right now.
I want everybody to have to answer this. Sean can go first, but I want to hear Chip's take too.
I'm gonna qualify it, but I'm gonna go. If Tiger is healthy, I'm gonna go Tiger. I mean, Kyle tweeted out the stats yesterday about his performance in majors. I mean, if you just told me, hey, there's a guy who went 6th, 2nd, and 1st in the last 3 majors, and he's won 2 of his last 7 starts on the PGA Tour. I mean, that's the best player in the world, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go – this is shocking, but I'm going to go Rory. He also has a major this year. And he's – I mean, he's leading the world in – or he's leading the PGA Tour in strokes gained. But, and it's not close. Like, that's the thing. It's like he – his 2.7 strokes – and I know it doesn't take into account Augusta, but – him being at 2.7 strokes gained when only 3 guys are over 2, I mean, that's crazy. Like, that's a crazy amount. And I just think that, you know, I think that because he didn't play that well at the Masters, we're sort of like, you know. But he's got 8 top 10s and 9 appearances. I'm going to go with Rory.
I'm going DJ.
That 73, though, was really disappointing on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't great.
I'm not going to overthink it too much. I think Dustin Johnson's still the best player in the world. He's my pick to win at the PGA, and I think that was the even though he wasn't able to, you know, chase down or be able to play keep up on Sunday at the Masters, he was still T2, right? Like at strokes gained. What's Dustin Johnson in the strokes gained right now, Kyle?
He's 2nd. Yeah. 2.3.
Yeah, and that doesn't count the T2 at Augusta after shooting a 68 on Sunday. So I'm not going to overthink it. He is the world number one right now, and I think he's the best player in the world.
I like that. It's good. I love the Tiger.
Tiger's getting loosened up.
I think Tiger, like, I don't know. It sounds both crazy and not. I think there's a real case to be made for him as not only the best player in the world, but that he should be the favorite at the next three majors. Not just because like the Tiger deal where like everybody wants to back him or whatever, so they have to lower his odds, but like legitimately should be the favorite because it's at Bethpage, because it's at Pebble, and because he's going to play well at Open Championships, I think, for a long time. Okay, before we do Trinity Forest picks, do you have any Brandel Koepka thoughts, Sean?
You know, I think it was fun and entertaining. I do think, you do have to question why a guy who's won three majors, why you don't consider that he can – challenge Tiger. I think that is questionable. And I thought that, we want more openness from our athletes on social media, right? So I thought it was funny in that sense. But I don't know. It's just, it was good. It's just, it's unfortunate. See, you do have to wonder. I don't quite know what it is with Brandel and Brooks. Some of the takes that were coming out at Masters Week were, They were hot, and I don't know what he doesn't see in Brooks's makeup. I guess there's a lot of intangibles. Even with like Max, we were talking about these intangibles. We want to try to explain everything. We've got strokes gained, we've got shot length. We can analyze every shot, but at some point there are certain intangibles that people just possess, and Brooks seems to have those. He did finally win another regular tour event. To confirm that he was a well-rounded enough player to not only win majors, which of course is, that's a horrible problem to have. And then he's finished second a couple times. He's been on every major leaderboard, it feels like, for the last 2 years. It's not just that he won the three majors. It's I think he's been top 20 in 12 or top 25 in 12 of his last 15 majors or something.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't know. So I don't know where it comes from. I don't know. It's interesting though.
I like it because Brandel is very seasoned at sort of getting into it like this, and Brooks is not. And it almost feels a little bit like he was talking loud enough to get the Brooks monster to come out of its cave. And I like to see the Brooks monster out of its cave.
And if sports are entertainment, I know golf isn't used to this, but if sports are entertainment, we need villains, we need rivalries, we need, you need that. You have it in every other sport. So I think that, people love to sit back in the corner and go, oh, snap. But that is entertaining for people to watch, I think. That was my impression of someone watching a fight. So I think for the sake of the game, it provides an interesting storyline because usually things are so, genteel, if you will. So it's definitely entertaining. And Brandel's well researched. Brandel knows his stuff, but I don't necessarily agree with all of his conclusions, all of his takes. And so I think that, he isn't infallible. I think it's fine to disagree with him on this Brooks stuff.
Well, and in this content environment, there is when you're always having to provide takes and you're always having to take big swings, sometimes. I have worked with people who they come across what they believe to be one particularly glaring or damning stat, and they'll just ride it. And they'll ride it in their mind even to say, well, for the sake of the general conversation, it's like they feel a calling. They're like, no, I want to put this wrinkle in. I want to play devil's advocate to this. I want to present this contrarian point just so that it is part of the ether and part of the conversation. And so I don't fault Brandel for playing that role. Again, he's played it before, but I think this is the first time that we've seen Brooks on the opposite end of it.
And Brooks is the perfect person for it. I know you guys mentioned this, but if this was, I don't know, Spieth or Rory, those guys would be like, oh yeah, that is a good point about my strokes gained approach shots. Or if it was DJ, he'd be like, who's Brandel. But with Brooks, it's he cares just enough that it bothers him, but not so, I don't know. It's the perfect person for it to happen to.
I agree. All right. This weekend?
Yeah, Nelson picks.
Sean?
What do you got, Sean?
I'm going to go Keith Mitchell.
we've been talking about him the entire show.
Yeah. Have you really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Oh. I know Brooks is in the field. Brooks is like an obvious pick, but I think I always call like Keith Mitchell is like kind of Brooks Jr. Like he's got the Nike flapper and he's kind of, you know, beefy, big off the tee, mashes it. You probably get confused the two of them if you were at the Nelson, you didn't have a tee sheet and you were like 100 yards away. But I think, and you would know better about our Dallas meteorological forecast, but I believe it's been pretty rainy there. Is that correct?
I haven't looked.
You live in Dallas, don't you?
It's been nice. It's been great. It's like 70, no rain, sunny.
Oh, okay. Well, anyways, Trinity obviously played a little soft last year, and you know it's the Andy Johnson School of Architecture, mega width. But if that does play a little soft at all, it allows guys to mash it off the tee. So you want to take a guy with good stroke gain off the tee numbers. That's Brooks. That's Keith Mitchell. So to give the people their money's worth, I'm going to go Keith Mitchell because any baboon can pick Brooks. That's an easy pick.
Man.
I'm going Hideki.
Yeah. There we go.
What's the Hideki reading right now?
But I appreciate it.
What did you say, Chip?
What's the Hideki reading right now? How's what's the temperature of Hideki's game?
Well, here's my deal with Hideki. Go ahead, Sean.
I was just gonna say I've got to be honest. The can Hideki win question is starting to take on like a different tone, if that makes sense.
Here's my thing with Hideki. Like I think that this is a place where, I mean, I don't know. I think that you saw last year, like it's just ball striking, ball striking, ball striking. And we saw it from Leishman. We saw it from Keith Mitchell last year. He finished in the top five. And Hideki is, I mean, the numbers on him right now are kind of staggering. He's number three from tee to green on the PGA Tour. Rory's one, JT's two. And the problem obviously being that he's number 177 on like with his putter. So it's not good, but I think it gets mitigated a little bit at a place like this. So I'm going to bank on the tee to green and, yeah, I'll say he gets his, would it be his first one since Bridgestone 2 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah. We're going on wow. 2 years, two dark years on Hideki Island.
Yeah. So yeah, I'll go Hideki.
Give me Kevin Na. T6 last year.
You can have him.
T10 at Harbortown. Number one in viral videos and in my heart, Kevin Na. Let's go.
Hideki shot a 63 here last year, by the way. Second round, 63. There
we go. I think everyone was shooting 63, though, in the second round last year.
There was a lot of 63s.
Brandon Grace dropped a 62.
Yeah.
There was a 61 out there on the board. Well, all right, how about this? For the group, over under, lowest score that we see at the Byron Nelson this week, 61.5.
Oh.
I'll go over.
If I bump it up to 62.5.
As you know, the weather plays a huge factor in these things. I really don't feel comfortable making the prediction. I'm going to go over. I think they played it a little soft last year to kind of ease guys into it. There might be a little more fire into it, so I'm going to say a little bit higher. I think they will play it a little harder this year.
I agree. I agree with that. I'm over. Do you think the three of us playing a scramble could beat Romo at Trinity Forest this weekend?
Yeah.
Nice. That's a
lot.
I
do too.
No doubt.
What do you think that Romo's scores are going to be, Sean?
He's a member here, so that helps. I think we'll see a little better. I think I'm going to say we get under – I'm going to set the over under at 152.5.
So that'd be like 75, 76, something like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go under.
Yeah, I'm going to go under as well.
I've got him at like 72-77.
Does he beat anyone?
Yes.
Is Duvall playing?
I mean, it's a 156 player field. I think he beats someone.
I think he'll beat someone.
Yes.
Yeah, I do too.
Is that going to be the...
in the first round? It's going to be a Steph Curry. He'll beat some people in the first round, maybe not shoot 71, but he'll beat someone in the first round, but then second round, it might, as the sample gets larger, might end up behind everyone.
Mm. Anything else from the notebook, Sean? Anyone flying under the radar? Any stories that you're tracking right now?
The Joel Damon story is a cool one. He gave a great interview, man. He's up there with Max as far as just like very open, very honest. You have a guy who he survived his testicular cancer when he was a pro. His mother passed away from cancer when he was in high school. He spent 5 years on the Canadian tour. You know, he was in contention. He was tied for the lead going the last round. And he goes, man, like, I've experienced life and death, and this is not it. And you're like,
wow.
Very good quote. And so just great perspective of like, you know, we do make such a big deal out of this and treat it, probably give it more attention or treat it like a bigger deal than it is. And that was really refreshing to hear. And then he's talking about, he's from a small town, like the Washington, Idaho border. And people were asking like, oh, are you gonna be nervous to win? And he goes, and he was, of course. I mean, it's a lifelong dream you're trying to fulfill, but he's like, man, like they got free food inside. I get to hit Pro V1s on the range. Like, I have this great life. Like, this just doesn't happen for guys from where I'm from Clarkson, Washington. And it's just really cool to hear. So, he's up there with Max as far as just really refreshing, really honest, a good follow on Twitter. Yeah.
Joel Dahmen beat Justin Rose, Sergio Garcia, Ricky Fowler, Paul Casey, and others for the Wells Fargo Championship. So, heck of a week for him.
He was great. He was great, too, because he's like, look, the top 10 players in the world, they're way better than I am. And someone asked, like, well, would you want to be one of them, or do you think you can be one day? And he goes, I don't know that I want to. He's like, I don't work as hard as they do, like, but I enjoy my life. He's married. He travels with his wife. She posts photos of all their, like, they love to go out and eat interesting meals and stuff like that. And he's just like, I don't know if I necessarily agree with it or, like, maybe don't. You know, it's not the message you give your kids, but he's like, nah, he's like, I don't want to work much harder than I am. Like, I've got a good life. I enjoy it. I love it. And that was cool, too. Because we're always, you're always hearing this message of striving for more, striving for more, striving for more. And it's cool to just hear someone be like, no, like, I've achieved my dreams. I'm happy. I'm content.
Know your strengths and weaknesses.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah, stay in your lane. Go ahead.
I was going to say, really, I mean, it's what hurt Max when he came out of college was he felt like he had to get so much better. That's where his game went downhill. And you see it with a lot of college players of like, they come out here and everyone's like, oh, you got to get so much better. Everyone hits it 340 yards. Everyone hits their long irons 150 yards in the air and lands them on a dime. And they stop right away. And that's the biggest problem. A lot of these guys, sometimes when they come out of college, is these studs, they think they have to get so much better that they actually end up getting a lot worse. And Max admits that's what happened to him. And basically, he's back to playing the same game he played in college. He just unfortunately had to lose it for a little while. So I think Joel's advice or Joel's perspective, I think, would suit a lot of guys who come out with that talent of like, hey, like, yeah, work at it, but don't chase every possible way to improve, because at some point it can cost you everything golf wise.
Great stuff from Sean Martin. You can follow him on Twitter at PGA Tour S Martin. You can follow him at Kyle Porter CBS. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.
Thank you.